This is an interview with Ian Pickett by David Spencer. Ian is a graduate of the Rosebery Agricultural College in 1967, diploma number 1071, and later with a diploma of Rosebery Diploma of Agriculture Technology in 1972. This interview is conducted at Ian's home in Fulham, South Australia. Ian, thank you for making the time to talk to us about your days at Rosebery, and it'd be interesting to hear your recollections. So Ian, let's go back to the 60s. How come you went to Roseworthy, and what's the story there?
Well, I went to Oubray Agricultural High School. I'd always been interested in something to do with agriculture, and I'm glad I went to Oubray because it was, the curriculum was based around agriculture, and I did very well there. I ended up winning the Mortlock Scholarship, and I was in year 11, and at that stage they were just starting the matriculation for year 12, and so I had the choice of either doing matriculation or going to Roseworthy. So I decided I'd go to Roseworthy rather than go through matriculation into the uni. And having that Mortlock Scholarship to Roseworthy was probably what prompted me to do it. I was only 16, so a fairly young start, pretty green go to Roseworthy. So I think I was the second or third youngest in the year. So
can you remember sort of that those first couple of weeks, what it was like?
Oh yeah, well, leaving, I really was wet behind the ear. I was a bit of a, hadn't looked after myself very much at all. So that was a strange one. And when we arrived there, there was 40 of us, and luckily a number of guys from Roseworthy had gone there, so I had a good cohort that I could relate to. And when we went there, we got paired up. I got paired up with a guy called Roger Wake, and had a two-room dormitory in the upstairs block. And there were various others with four to a dormitory, and then a few of them were pushed down into the corridor, which were single rooms. But so it was a fairly big intake of 40.
Yeah. So the what was it like? The second and third years are notorious for harassing.
Oh yeah. Well, she was right on right from the start. So I luckily had a cousin who'd been to Roseworthy, so I knew what was coming, I didn't have too many worries with it, mainly because I had pretty well inured myself to the bastardisation ceremonies that were going to happen. And so I tended to crack jokes too, which helped lighten the atmosphere. And I didn't react too badly to it. A lot of guys, they couldn't cope with it. And in fact, we lost a number fairly early, I think, as a result of bastardisation.
Mm. You remember some of the things that they put you through?
Oh, some of the things were cleaning shoes, getting them up early, what they call arseholing, where they'd come in and flip the beds over and tip you out of bed, and yes sir, and you had to call yourself shit picket, and all those sort of things, and address all the seniors and sirs, and that was a lot of waking them up for dairy duty. You were the alarm clock to get the guys up for, and then they'd give you hell for waking them up. It was more verbal than anything, but it didn't worry me a lot because, as I said, I got myself prepared for it.
Yeah. Had you worked on farms and things before?
Look, my uncle had a dairy farm, and that's what I enjoyed most. But perhaps the thing that got me going, I was really interested in chooks. So when I went to primary school, there was an old fella down the road who had prize bantams, and so he gave me a few, and so I started breeding chooks up. And my grandfather was a, a bit of a quack vet and a very well read bloke, and he got hold of the World Poultry Journal. He was reading that, and at that stage, you know, the development of nutrition and genetics with poultry was in its infancy, so it was all being written up, and I read this with interest. So I knew more about the genetics of, and nutrition of poultry than any of the lecturers. At Urbray, I was the chair of the poultry club, and when they had lectures, you know, the teacher said, "Was that right, Pickett?" I'd become very involved with the breeding of Wyandotte bantams with their rose combs and their and sex-linked genes and a whole range of things that I knew about. I knew about all the amino acids and mineral balances and everything. So I was a pretty schooled-up kid.
All right. So can you remember the work routines at the college? What happened there?
Well, when we went there, you worked 3 days a week, 1 week, and 2 days the next week. We had lectures right through those days that we weren't working, plus Saturday mornings. So it was a pretty full-on time. When we got there, we were only allowed off once a month to go home. No cars, so we had to... you couldn't have it. As first years, you couldn't have a car on the place, so you were really stuck there. So, in retrospect, it was a very good bonding experience. I think a lot of people don't understand the close bond that Roseworthy guys have, because you've gone from boyhood to young man, and your attitudes and values and everything are all very, very similar. And even now, you know, we pick up as though it was yesterday.
Mm. And when you started there, like you said, the work, did you find that you were familiar with other things? Or, I mean, chooks, you were right on, and dairy. Yeah. What about the other areas?
Yeah, horses. I've always been interested in horses. So had horses around, and that was a good time, because at that stage, the last of the Clydesdales was there, a horse called Baron. And he was a great old horse. Really, the only use they made of him was at the market garden, where they used to use a thing called a French plough. And this old horse could walk between the cabbages with his bloody great feet and not tread on one. And actually, we made a hell of more of a mess with the French plough for weeding between the cabbages. You'd keep knocking cabbages out and everything with the French plough as he dragged it along. So, but old Baron was there. We had a horse called Pam that pulled the milk cart, and the milk cart used to be the shit cart. and the milk, so you'd go up and get the eggs from the poultry farm, and bring the milk down to the kitchen. They would all go, pick up stuff from the veggies and take it down. It was all done on the cart behind Pam. And then on top of that, you'd throw manure in on the cart and take that out to the paddocks.
What time of day was that? Was that like in the morning?
Early mornings, yeah. So that was before breakfast.
Oh, so they did eggs and the milk and the veggies all before breakfast?
Yeah, all before breakfast. The eggs were put in the cool room up there, and then you pick them up. And so it was all done to bring the milk down fresh for breakfast.
Oh, yeah. And did the people on dairy did that?
Yes. It was, that was the last job with dairies. One would knock off early while the others were cleaning up and take Pam out. And harness her up and away you'd go.
Yeah, well, so you would have been good on the stock horses too, being a good rider and that sort of thing.
I was not a good rider, but an adequate rider. Yeah. We had a couple of good horses there. A horse called Honey, who was a bit highly strung for most people. In fact, a lot of people ended up at Wadsley's with her. She'd take off and Tea was a bit hard. Flicker was another one that was a... Flicker was my favourite horse. He was a black horse and quite liked him.
Yeah, on the on different workplaces, can any staff sort of stand out as memorable?
Oh, yeah. Ray Norton, who was the farm manager at the time, Ray had a fantastic sense of humour and I used to like him. And Cliffy Hooper, he was the sheep guy. He was as dry as any. I think Cliffy had been there for 30 years and I think he wrote his notes the first year he was there and used them all the way through. so he was quite a character. And we had another guy called Graham Quick, who was a Seventh-day Adventist. He was the engineering and lectured in engineering, and Graham was a Seventh-day Adventist and they call them vegans these days, but so, and he had a dashing dog that they were feeding him as a vegan too, and we used to have great delight in throwing rabbits or any other meat we could find over the fence for the dog. We felt sorry for him.
Yeah.
And then Bob Baker was the lecturer in oenology. I used to babysit his kids there quite regularly.
Yeah. Yeah. And what about Herriot? He was the principal at the time.
Yeah, Bob Herriot. He was an uncompromising, tough guy. He had... they all called him Hairy Ass, and, he was... in fact, he was over the top. I think a lot of his punishments didn't fit the crimes. You know, so people were just expelled for what I really not, you know, drinking or something like that. Fairly minor anyway, I thought he was a bit tough.
Did many of your year get kicked out like that?
Yeah, a number of them, yeah. And actually, it was quite funny. We were doing, when we were in second year, we were doing arseholing, which was tipping the beds up. And doing that, somebody hit me and knocked me out. And so the guys got him and took him down to the shit dam and made him do three laps of the shit dam. And he got an ear infection and went to the doctor treated him and found out what had happened and reported it. So all of our year got pulled in for shit damning him. And of course, we all stuck together and said that we all did it. And at any rate, I got out of it because I'd been knocked out cold. So. But it doesn't matter. I was still involved. So anyway, Harriet was sacked us all, sent a note, but he said, they're owning up to it, they've let them off. But so all our parents got this note about how bad we'd been in second year.
Did anybody ever keep those letters?
I think my mother, my sister might have it. Oh. She's got all the paperwork, yeah.
Oh, it'd be nice to have that for the archives.
Okay, yeah, I'll see if I can find it. Yeah. Yeah.
Was that the situation where you didn't have to paint the grandstand down at the Oval?
We were grounded for 3 months. Not allowed off for 3 months, but we all played football. So that gave us a chance to get off the college, so we were grounded for 3 months. We had to do all those sort of things, duties.
So did you play for A grade, the B grade?
I was halfway in between. I was a good B grader and a poor A grader.
Yeah, you're fairly tall then, so you would have been...
But I was 70 kilos ringing wet, yeah. You know. So in fact, we had the reunion for when we won the grand final there 2 years back, and I've kept my Guernsey, and I couldn't even. I reckon I'd bungee straps to hold it on. It was one of those lace up tight Guernseys,
yeah.
And so Yeah, so I was fairly skinny. I was tall and skinny.
Oh, yeah. So with the football, you played at like Williston and Hamley Bridge. What was
that? Yeah, Hamley Bridge. Went over to Lindock, as far as Lindock, two Gawler teams. Hamley Bridge, yeah. Yeah, that's about it, yeah. About eight teams, I think, there was, isn't it?
Yeah. So if you were in the grand final, you would have had that parade, that notorious parade in Gawler.
Yes, that's right.
You remember some of that?
Well, vaguely, I think, yes. We came up the main street of Gawler and, there was a bit of a stir. There was a mob of bikies, but we got out of that all right. Keith Pattinson, who was there. It was in our year. Keith was ended up a state rover. He was a very good footballer and everything. But he was a cocky little beggar and he'd start things and then hide behind us. And the big guys had to protect him. So there was a stoush with a few bikies that night. And it ended up in the paper, I reckon, about it happening. But anyway, we all got out of it all right.
What about some of the floats in the parade? You remember?
Can't remember. No, no detail at all. But yeah, they were pretty rudimentary. But
I mean, these days all sorts of safety stuff. In those days, anything went, didn't it?
Oh yeah, that's right. It was So it was mainly guys really dressed up. I think I dressed up in a ballerina dress. But I can't remember. Look, it could be imagination.
Yeah. what about summer? Do you play any sports in summer?
Yeah, I played tennis, but again, I was a very average player, and you tended to have the holidays off, you know, so that lapsed a fair bit.
Yeah, because I guess summertime, half the season's gone because you're away.
Yeah, you're away, that's right. And also, you know, my favourite sport was basketball. I played football for the school, but my sport was basketball, and they didn't have that at Roseworthy at the time. But when I went home, the teams were grabbing me to play basketball.
Yeah. I was looking at the magazine the other day, and it talks about the graduating year, and they rated each of the graduates under Wine, Woman and Song, and your rating was 5, 5 and 90. So 5 for Wine, 5 for Woman and 90 for Song.
Right, that'll be right. Yes, I had a reputation of enjoying myself, I had a good memory for and retention of jokes and singer. My father must have been at it too. He had an old army songbook with all the dirty ditties from the army, and I'd memorised all those so I could lead the singing going. And yes.
What about Open Day and had the concert at night? Do you remember doing anything in those?
Tony Clancy and I don't know. Tony's a very funny guy. He and I have got a similar sense of humour, and we used to make up song or ditties, and we tended to be compeers of the show, and we do things like "Ickle Wockle, little thing has no feathers on its wing, cannot fly, cannot sing, cut its fucking head off." So we'd stand up and do silly things like that, kind of like John Cleese type stuff.
Let's get back to your the other stuff as a student. What about your lecturers? You mentioned a few of them. Can you remember some were good lecturers or funny lecturers or that sort of thing?
Yeah. Look, we had a vet called Frank Hardy. Frank had a cleft palate and he was very hard to hear. Difficult. He had a pet sow too, a big, large white that used to come into the classroom with him, and he'd drive around. He'd go into Gawler with a pet sow hanging out the window. But Frank was also interested in poultry, or particularly ducks. He was a breeder of ducks, but Frank, when he, so because you had to listen intently to hear, I could virtually remember everything he said, because I was listening intently to with his cleft palate. He was, difficult to understand.
Yeah, but I guess you got used to it over time.
You get used to it over time, and you tend to listen more intently. I must have listened more intently, because, you know, it stuck with me. You know, I didn't have to study very hard at all because I could remember most of it.
Yeah. What about your study routine? Were you long into the night, or you're a quick man?
No, I'm very. Look, I was consistent without being heavy. I was an early to bed guy, and but I put a good hour in, and hour and a half each night, and that got me through.
Yeah.
Pretty well. I developed that routine at home. There were four of us at home and one table, so we had to be quiet and go like mad. And I developed that routine of regular work.
Yeah. Can you remember the food and that sort of thing at Rosewood?
Yeah. The bread on the table, they'd put it out 2 hours, 3 hours before the meal, and they used to call it the fly landing strip, and weevils and the porridge. I can remember that, and actually it wasn't too bad, except for the cabbage. The cabbage, I don't know how they could make cabbage soup like wet newspaper, but that wasn't too bad. And we had this white pudding, a pudding with this white sauce, and I don't know what the hell you'd call it, but there was a kind of a cake with a white sauce over it. That was something I could remember, but most of it wasn't too bad. Oh, the real thing was when the first years came, that because it was Jersey milk, it's high in cream, and they had to water it down, put skim milk in it to thin it down, because everyone got the scouts. And one week there, I don't know, whoever was in charge in the kitchen, they didn't water it down, and all the first years ended up with all the scours for the week because of the rich cream.
Can you remember the what about your daily routines, like what time was breakfast, that sort of thing?
Breakfast must have been about 7:30, I think, was breakfast, and then it was very routine, 12 o'clock, 5:30, and you all had to line up, and the seniors went in first, and the first years went in last, and all that sort of stuff.
Yeah, you said that you only got home once a month, so yep. Went around Gaul. Did you used to go to local dances and stuff like that?
Yeah, went to mainly 60-40 in those days, and then once we got to second year, you know, you could get out a bit more, but used to go, because we had cars, used to go up to Ryanee and Auburn to the dances there. They were pretty popular, but around Gawler there was dances on, but you really had trouble getting in and out in first year.
Yeah, and what are the holidays? Did you work on farms, or what did you do then?
Yeah, my father was a plumber, and so he was always looking for labour. So guess who got the job in those days? There was no ditch diggers or anything, and metal and pipes that had to be threaded. So I tended to get those labouring jobs during my holidays to pay my way through.
And you obviously had an interest in chook. So how did that develop after third year? What did you do with that?
Well, I initially took a job with Wetmore Feed Mills, which are an American company, because my real interest had turned to... I developed a real interest in nutrition, and they were a feed mill company that specialised in the cattle industry. The feedlotting was just starting. And so they employed me as a nutritionist, and I went up and down the East Coast with them, where they were trying to sell the mills, and where they sold one, I developed rations for the particular property. But I got a bit sick of that after 12 months living out of a suitcase. The Ag Department chased me down because they were looking for a poultry advisor, and they knew about me and asked me would I like to join. So I joined the Ag Department in 68.
Where did you start with working?
I started in town and out at Parafield Poultry Research Centre, and then they opened up on York Peninsula and stationed me there. Up till that time, barley had not been widely used as a chook food, so my position was fairly largely funded by the Barley Board, with the aim of trying to get pigs and poultry on the barley as the ration. And everyone said you couldn't do it, but we knew how to do it. And barley has a low, the calories aren't well absorbed by the chook, but when you treat them properly, it is. And so we converted the chooks all the way into poultry rations in South Australia, became primarily barley based.
Mm. In hindsight, at Rosalie, what sort of study stuff do you remember as having the most impact on your career?
Oh, always animals.
Yeah.
All the animal stuff. Horticulture defied me. I didn't like that. when I say I didn't like it, I got through it all right. And agronomy, I wasn't too bad. I quite liked some of that, but horticulture, no.
Yeah. Do you remember doing exams and that sort of thing?
Yes.
Is that any good?
Exams didn't worry me a lot. It was mainly assignments that I didn't like doing, but projects. Everyone used to buy their weed collections and their insect collections off the year before them. I was into that. I didn't particularly like the idea of wandering around trying to find weeds and press them, and the insects sticking them on pins and trying to dry them out. Yeah. A bit beyond me.
Did you think Rosalie was at that time? Was it technologically ahead, or you reckon they were a bit behind industry? Or
no, Roseworthy was pretty good. In hindsight, it was excellent because it gave us a terrific balance of practicality and knowledge, enough knowledge to get to develop it up, and so you could become a couple of years' experience out in the field, you became quite proficient, and most importantly, you had a good understanding of the practical use of knowledge. And in those days, it was after the war, and a lot of the Green Revolution was happening. It was highly quickly technology was being adapted into agriculture, and I think the Roseworthy graduates played a role of extending that knowledge to farmers because of our skill in knowing enough to be able to talk to researchers and understand what they're talking about and the application of it in the field. So farmers appreciated the Roseworthy probably more than the agricultural graduates, young university graduates that came into agriculture, who tended to go into research, and the Roseworthy boys tended to go into extension.
Mm. Did you get involved with the Adelaide show?
Yes. Yeah.
Doing what?
Well, we mainly with poultry and eggs and Kentucky Fried Chicken hadn't even started when I was in the Department of Ag, and so we used to do barbecue chicken. But chicken was a luxury food, really. It, it was rare for people to eat chicken on a regular basis. And, in fact, the meat birds hadn't evolved a lot. You were still caponising chickens and to get the fat chickens.
What's the caponise?
Caponise, where you remove the testicles. And so when you look back, it was a cruel bloody thing. You'd pin them to a board with elastic bands and just open, do an incision in and put a hook in and hook the testicles out from no anaesthetic, no nothing, and flick the chook off and away you'd go. I didn't lose any, but you had to be skilled at it.
Yeah. What was the thing where you put like a little pellet under their skin?
That was another one. That was hormonal caponising. But that came in a little bit late. That didn't last long though. So you were putting female hormones, pellet into them and to fatten them. But the original one, I first learnt caponising as a young lad and how to do it.
Mm. We were talking there about that, the chooks, I think about the animal liberation or the animal, the rules these days, that things we used to do in farming was be completely outlawed these days. And
yeah, well, actually, with poultry, I quite enjoyed, I liked the free run. Dryden sheds were popular. They were a shed for chickens where the feeding and roosting was above a dropping pit, and then you had the floor where the chickens could run around in deep litter, and they were good. But the cage unit started to come in, and in fact that's the reason I left poultry. I couldn't the factory farming methods, and the pigs were coming in with these sow crates and everything, and I didn't like it. Everyone seemed to be going to cage units, and in fact, what put me off was a huge loss of chickens. One really hot spell with 14,000 chooks in a cage unit, and half of them dead, and they couldn't keep them cool enough, and I thought, that's it. I've had enough of this.
So you returned to Rosewell in 1971. So what brought that on?
Well, a fella called Shorty Webber, who ended up a director of agriculture, was in Kadena office, and he'd just come back from Hawkesbury. He'd done the course over there, and he talked widely about it and about the sociology aspects of it, and that interested me. And then when Roseworthy started up, I thought, geez, I wouldn't mind having a go at that. And so I went down there to basically do the extension program with the RDAT.
Yeah, so that was a bit of a coming in as a mature age student with all these other young guys. It was,
yeah, well, I had a wife back in Kadena with a young baby, and Sandra said, no, go for it, she'd be right. And so I bought an old FJ and came down, went home weekends and came down during the week.
Had you noticed changes in the college life then compared to when you left?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, a lot of it, yeah. I'm just trying to think what the major differences were. Probably because I was older, I think that was it, and I was more focused. So I didn't really get involved much in the college life itself.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Because I remember you come Monday mornings and you go on Friday night, and also you had a lot of experience behind you, so a lot of stuff was easier to just absorb, I guess.
Yeah, well, I, the economics it interests me. In fact, I've been teaching economics at TAFE at Cadena before I went back there. So I ducks the gear in with Ken Lesky and with that, and then the poultry side of it. Well, I elected to do that. Well, we had a little Egyptian guy lecturing in that, but I could teach him as much as he knew, I think.
Yeah. I'm listening to your talk about routines. Things hadn't changed much, see, in terms of the work routines, the lecture routines, the meal, all that stuff. Even back, I've interviewed people who went back in the 40s, and it's been this very consistent all the way through.
Yes.
I guess different people, different times, but they didn't seem to change the recipe much.
No. They're all army cooks. Yeah, they knew how to ruin anything. They didn't do a bad job, but it was pretty bland but anyway, it got us through. We all grew pretty well, and big strong boys.
Yeah, and what about? You remember much about the old swimming pool?
Yes, the swimming pool was really a dam that did as a swimming pool. I played water polo. I was always a pretty good swimmer, and so I was the goalkeeper, and I held the dog paddle record for Roseworthy. In fact, when I went back and did the RDAT, I still won the dog paddle race. Because I was used to treading water as a goalie.
Yeah. Oh, so you had a swimming carnival. They had an athletics day too, didn't they?
Yeah, I had an athletics day. Yeah.
Do you participate in that?
Yeah, I do. I was a good long distance runner. In fact, I was favourite for the steeplechase in first year, where they train you up and get you running. So long and skinny, I could run pretty well. Yeah. But I wasn't a speedster. I was more of an endurance athlete. So.
Yeah. You had a few, you were a member of a few studs, I guess?
Yes, one stud, yeah, that's right, train you up.
Yeah. But what about like when you're as a second or third year, do you have a stud then?
Oh, yes, that's right. You put the first years up for auction and examine their teeth and make sure their knees were all right. And then you'd bid for it.
Yeah. Yeah. What about when you came back in for the RDAT?
Yep.
Did you join a stud then?
No, I didn't. No. I stayed out of that.
Yeah. What were the names of studs that you're in?
Look, I can't remember. I honestly can't remember any of those. They're probably in the magazines, but I can't remember them.
Yeah. That sort of thing had stayed with Roseville for years. I think it only went out in the 80s or 90s. I think once it became a
co-ed,
College of Arts Education and stuff, and all that stuff, a lot of stuff disappeared.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. So after you did the RDAT, you went back into the Department of Ag?
Yeah, went back into the Department of Agriculture and back to Cadena. And they wanted somebody to write the economics course for distance learning for TAFE. So I took that job in Adelaide. And, it was a time where... as I say, I was not happy with the way intensive agriculture was going, intensive farming was going with animals, and so it was a good opportunity to go and write the farm management course for TAFE for the open learning, and I hated that, being locked in, after roaming around the country for most of my working life, to be locked up writing. So, and then a job came up with for animal care, training vet nurses and that sort of stuff. So I got that out at Panorama and went from there. And then the racing industry wanted to develop training courses for horse people. And so I got the job of doing that because of my interest in horses, and mainly because I'd married a horse girl. So she, I, by... You either leave them or you join them. And I developed quite an interest in horses, horse nutrition. So that really interests me, and I branched pretty well in that direction.
Mm. So with when you think about your Rosalie days, like we all have these crossroads that we come to. Was there ever a crossroad where you could have gone in a different direction? Or you went to Herbray, then Rosalie was a natural progression?
Yeah, natural progression. Yeah, a lot of our blokes ended up in valuing, because valuing became a profession. And we had a fair bit of promotion for that. The Commonwealth Bank had started up a rural section, and they were looking for valuers for that, and so a lot of our gear went into valuing.
Yeah, you recently had a big reunion, didn't you, for all your...
Yeah.
So it was, did you have a good turn up?
Oh, good roll up, yeah, in fact. Because there was only 19 of us graduated from the 40 that started.
Wow.
So it was a pretty good cull rate, and in fact, of those 19, I think only 12 of us passed for the year. So a few of them returned to do it to catch up the following year. So
yeah.
I think there was only 12 graduates from 40.
What do you put that down to?
There's a big dropout after first year. They culled them fairly heavily. And so anyone who wasn't coping very well and not passing very well saw the door. In those days, they didn't give you a chance to reset. You either passed or you didn't. If you didn't pass everything, you're out.
So was the biggest loss the first year? So second and third year, you lost a few more?
Yeah, second year there was another big loss. And then third year, you should have got through, but a couple of the guys got expelled. And another two had to go back the following year and redo their stuff. And it was a big dropout.
Yeah, because I noticed there's a big recorder book in the archives.
Yep.
And I was looking at your page yesterday, and there was a few people there who left the same day as you, but they didn't have a diploma number, so that explains it.
Yeah.
Yeah, that'd be disappointing after 3 years.
Yes, that's right. Yeah, that's where I think it was tough, where a guy missed out on one or two subjects and they wouldn't give you one.
Yeah, so no supplementaries?
No supplementaries, no.
Oh.
But that only came in. They did that third year, but they made them reset the next year to do another year.
Oh, that's pretty hard going.
In fact, that was rare for that to happen. Yeah.
Yeah. Ian, at the reunion, was it just the graduates who went, or did all the...
No, a few of the guys who started off. We invited all the guys who came there in the first year, but a number of those didn't come. But I reckon there was seven or eight who came who were from previous years here, from early on.
Yeah, and do you keep in touch with these people or the graduates all the time? Or
yeah, I travel around Australia, and I can go most places around Australia and stay with a Roseworthy bloke.
Yeah. I should give you a recorder.
Yeah, so I can, last year I caught up with Bookie Lawton right up above Armidale, Pundara. In fact, they're right in the middle of a big fire up there at the moment, up there. But that was interesting, minus 14 up on the hill up there, nearly killed me.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, and no feed, he was hand feeding 700 cattle. And drought,
yeah.
And Dave Oldfield, I caught up with him, and way up and near Innisfail, and the year before I caught up with Bing Crosby at Moree. He's a pilot, so he took us fly around everywhere. So most places, up at Noosa, Bill Piercy, I catch up with him. Yeah, so. Look, there's nearly everywhere you can find a Roseworthy bloke to catch up with.
Do you ever go back to Roseworthy itself?
I haven't been back regularly. Yeah, I do go back. With the horse program, I helped with that, so I went there fairly regularly. But I haven't been back since the real development of the veterinary school has occurred at Roseworthy.
Yeah, it'd be worth a visit because it's, talk about changes, it's now 80% female students and and all very orientated towards vet and animal science.
That's right, that's the big popular one.
Yeah, but it'll keep going, and so it's good to see that Roseworthy's back in the limelight again.
Yes, that's right. Okay. Yeah, yeah, and the ag department no longer has extension offices, and they're not a big employer. And I feel a bit sorry for graduates because the ag department was a brilliant way of because look, you come out of any educational institution, you've got a lot of stuff, but not a lot of applied skills. And the farmers used to train us in the Department of Agriculture. And in fact, a lot of the guys who were private consultants started off in the Department of Agriculture. They developed their skills there and then went private. But these days, trying to become a private consultant is pretty difficult. Because you don't have that grounding that the ag department gave a lot of people.
Yeah. Do you keep in contact with the Department of Ag cronies?
Yeah. Catch up with a few of them around the place. Yeah. Not on a regular basis. Because I shifted out of the Department of Ag, I went back into I ended up as head of veterinary and applied science for TAFE, and then. Farm Biz was just starting off with the Department of Agriculture, and anyway, they asked me would I be interested in trying to get the program going here in South Australia. So I left TAFE and went back into, which was in primary industries, and set up Farm Biz for them, and spent the last 10 years of my working life there.
Oh, you've been a versatile...
I had management experience in education by that stage. Pretty well, probably the only one with, agricultural education management. It fitted me pretty well.
Okay. All right. Well, look, we'll leave it there, Ian. It's been great talking to you about your reminiscences of the Roseworthy days, and we thank you for your contribution to the. To the collection of oral histories that we've done over the years for Roseworthy graduates, and thanks once again.
Thanks very much, Dave. Yeah, good on you. I hope that worked out all right.